Hello and welcome to the Raptors Ration Podcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky spicy soup. It's time to get fired up. Raptors, unfortunately, not fired up enough. They lose their 13th consecutive game. There seems to be no end in sight for this losing streak. Raptors tonight catch a bit of a break, I suppose, against the Sixers. I mean, not I suppose. Tyrese Maxey has been an absolute just juggernaut whenever he plays the Raptors. And so not having to see him in any context was a blessing for the Raptors. It seems like Tyrese is okay. He just missed a game here. But the Raptors still unable to contain the Sixers, who scored 135 points to 120 for the Raptors. Offensively, it's been a struggle for the Sixers. I mean, it's the whole thing's been a struggle for the Sixers since Embiid's gone down. Turns out when you lose the reigning MVP, you know, you're going to struggle. But offensively, we've really seen some quiet nights from the Sixers since Embiid's gone down. And of course, you take Maxey out that equation as well. And yeah, I mean, you're playing at home, you're the Raptors, you're coming off a lot of rest. Last game was on Wednesday. So, you know, you did have quite a bit of time here, got a couple practices in. Unfortunately, they did not get any new bodies. Ochai Agbaji, good news, at least on that front, because the last time we saw him, he had that super terrifying fall against the Knicks. He's okay, and well, he's not okay, but he's sore. He's not able to play, but it doesn't seem like he's had any sort of major issue, so that's good, because when that happened, that seemed really scary. And RJ and Quickly, to whatever extent that they're practicing or around the team, you know, they're continuing to do their reconditioning stints, and so their returns to the lineups are a bit more delayed. We will see if they come back in the group or not. Regardless, Raptors had a lot of rest against the Sixers team that don't have their top two scorers in Embiid and Maxey, who give you like basically a combined 60 a night. And they still give up 135. Now, of course, you got to tip your hat to the Sixers. I mean, to a large degree, they were able to just shoot the lights out from three. I mean, that's why, you know, they were able to win this game. 24 for 43 from three, 56% from three. You got 6 from Campaign, you got 6 from Kelly Oubre, you got 5 from Nicola Batum, who I don't even think that he really even held the ball. He catches high and he shoots it high. The ball's in his hand for less than a second before he gets that thing up. Buddy Hield with 3, Kyle Lowry with 3, and I think Tobias Harris had the other one. But that's a season high for the Sixers, 24 made threes. And I think from the Raptors side too, some of it I suppose was pretty bad defense. Like there's no doubt that you can look at the start of this game and, you know, as always, Raptors have to call the first timeout. It was 10-2 for the Sixers before Darko called the first timeout at 9:24. You know, in the first quarter, in that stretch there, I thought Kelly was disappointing as a defender. I mean, he doesn't contest Campaign pulling up for 380 seconds of the game. Like, he literally just sees that his defense, like, Campaign obviously is a guard, so that's not Kelly's man, but Campaign's defender gets hung up on the screen and Kelly's supposed to be there for the help, but he just like stops and stares at him, and Campaign just knocks down a wide open three, like without even an effort to get out there. It's been 80 seconds into the game. Like let's at least make one rotation, see if someone else is there, force him inside the arc. We know Campaign's a good shooter. That's not good. Right. And then, you know, a couple plays later, Kyle Lowry is on a transition pull up three. And again, Kelly doesn't come back out to contest Kyle. And we know Kyle's a good 3-point shooter. So again, 10-2, Dark Horse called the first timeout. The Raptors start fighting and they start playing respectable basketball from that point onward. And again, the Sixers were really hot. Like, you know, you could always point to a couple moments defensively where they weren't there. But ultimately speaking, you also have to point to the fact that the Sixers were making every three. But at the same time, like, I just think that, yeah, the Raptors' defensive intensity, when you compare what they were doing defensively versus what the Sixers were doing defensively, kind of night and day. And I think the one thing watching the Sixers now is, like, you watch them, especially with Kyle there, but Kyle kind of just accelerates and amplifies their existing identity defensively, which when you have Nick Nurse as your coach, you're going to create a lot of deflections. You're going to create a lot of on-ball pressure. Those are hallmarks of sort of how he wanted to play when he was with the Raptors for those 5 years. And you see those principles being instilled with the Sixers. Yeah, of course, they're really down bodies, and they're playing Jeff Down Jr. at moments. So I'm happy for him that he was able to find his way back into the league. And of course, they got a more veteran roster. They're basically just waiting to get healthy, and hopefully Embiid comes back and they're able to do something in the playoffs. Right now, because the East is so bunched up, they're actually in the play-in picture, but we know that their quality is better than that of a play-in team. Still, even without a lot of guys in the lineup, though, my point is they still give you that characteristic defense that Nick Nurse, you know, wants to play. I mean, you could go through and just watch this game. The Raptors are quite uncomfortable. Lots of deflections, lots of steals, and you know, just creating easy opportunities for the Sixers to sustain their offense. Because in addition to the fact that they knocked down 24 threes, they still had some pretty good half court scoring from the likes of Tobias Harris, who has been up and down, but he was quite good today. From Kelly Oubre, who has torched the Raptors all season. I remember him first like 2 weeks of the season coming in and torching the Raptors back then as well. You know, he was able to get a lot of his scoring. And of course, just Kyle and Campaign just doing a little bit of damage between the two of them, and just creating enough havoc and doing enough playmaking. Meanwhile, I think on the Raptors side, like, you know, scoring, weirdly enough, despite all the pressure that the Sixers put on the Raptors, I thought the Raptors actually did a good job of, you know, sticking to their principles on offense. You know, maybe like a couple bad turnovers. I think Kelly on that front was especially guilty. 5 turnovers tonight. You know, him and Bruce Brown had a couple bad turnovers to start the game, which really looked like, okay, you would love your starters to come in and, you know, not force feed passes or just like, you know, miscommunicate on plays. But at the same time, you also get that they have a higher playmaking burden than most. And besides the turnovers from those two, and Kelly had 5, Bruce Brown had 2, they both have had a really efficient game. Kelly with 18, 5 rebounds and 11 assists, 3 steals. Bruce Brown, 18 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals. One of his best games actually as a Raptor was tonight in this game. I thought he played really in control, took the right shots in the right moments. Didn't really hesitate on the threes, which for Bruce Brown, one of the small things that might have irked you, and I know it irked me, was just the ball would swing to Bruce with an advantage, whether he's open, whether he's catching against a rotating defender, and he would just pause for a second, wait for the defense to reset, and then go. And it's like the whole advantage is kind of like, you know, already ruined if you do that. Like, you just got to take the three when you catch it. If it's there, he's a solid enough three-point shooter, especially in this kind of lineup. Just take the threes when they're there, and I thought he did a good job with that tonight. 3 of 4 from three. Also made a couple really good passes. And in terms of guys who can actually hit the paint, off the dribble, there's just not a lot of those guys right now for the Raptors. I mean, for the starting five, the other option, I suppose, is Javon Freeman Liberty. It feels like with Javon, he almost always wants to go to the basket, so it's a little bit predictable, but at the same time, you know, with the spacing around him, actually, the Raptors do have the floor well spaced with Kelly at 5, you know, whichever one you want to say is playing 4. Let's say Bruce Brown. Gary obviously is a shooter, then Grady's a shooter. Like, Javon actually has that space to get downhill, and I thought he's taking those, and sometimes it really clicks for him, sometimes it doesn't. I think it's just finding the right balance to make him even more efficient. But besides Javon, it's basically Bruce who has that job of, you know, creating something off the dribble and making a couple passes off of that. And I thought Bruce actually played his role really well tonight. You know, of course, in the current moment, the starting lineup's going to feature a lot of Gary Trent Jr., who took 20 shots in 32 minutes tonight. Unfortunately, only 2 assists. But ultimately, I thought Gary did a good job of, you know, just being aggressive, sticking to certain moments, give them a scoring pop when they needed it. You know, Gary had a little personal scoring run there at the end of the second quarter, where he knocked down a catch and shoot 3 from Kelly Olynyk in the paint. Then Gary drove it to the basket for a little floater. He's been using that more often recently. And then he had most emphatic defensive play of the Raptors night. And there weren't that many, because again, they allowed 135 points to a Sixers team without Maxey and without Embiid. But Mo Bamba had the ball at the top trying to, you know, I guess do something with it. And Gary snuck in from behind and just completely clamped him. And despite Gary being much smaller than Mo Bamba, he just like ripped Bamba to the ground, got the ball, and then ran ahead for the layup. And Matt Devlin had a really great call for that one. He was trying to drum up a lot of excitement for this game, and God bless his heart. But in any case, I thought, look, Gary continues to be that aggressive option. I think for me, it's like you would love to see, again, with more usage, can he get to the foul line a little bit more? Can he also give you some more playmaking, the assists? But ultimately, like, you can't really quibble with 10 of 20. He took like 2 or 3 bad shots. It's going to happen. But ultimately, he's trying to provide that offense. Grady, for the starting five, you know, wasn't that prominently involved in the first quarter. And I think they've changed Grady's sub patterns recently as well. They're kind of using him the way they use Scotty for a lot of the year, which is to play the first like 6 minutes of the first quarter, then come out for like 3-4 minutes, then finish off the end of the first quarter, play with the second group for the start of the second quarter, and kind of repeating this this pattern for the second half as well. It's kind of what Darko has done with his like star players. And yeah, I mean, in this context, Grady is sort of one of those like featured star players. Now, of course, I do feel like this doesn't necessarily get him in the right rhythms to sort of cut and move and just get himself open. But also at the same time, like, we've also seen games recently, like that Knicks game, for example, when he had 23 points, he can also be super aggressive and get his own points. And it's and especially with how he's used in the offense and his current skill set, it's a lot of having to cut. It's a lot of having to move. And, you know, on that part, I do think that Grady could have worked a little bit harder to get open for his shots. But despite a cold first half, I thought he came out really aggressive to start the third quarter. That's where you saw Grady get himself to the foul line a bunch. Like, this is why it's like, okay, Grady offensively doesn't have, you know, the same skill set as Gary. I would say Gary's more advanced, as he should be, because he's been in the league longer. But Grady was still able to get himself to the foul line 7 times in 31 minutes. And those seven all came in like a 5-minute span there to start the third quarter. And it's like, you would love to see a little bit more of that consistency from Gary as well. But Grady just mixing in a couple of backdoor cuts, driving to the basket, and getting fouled on those, got fouled on a 3-point shot as well. And overall, like, it wasn't that, you know, big of a scoring night, 12 points for Grady, but he got in a variety of ways. And I just thought in general did a good job of, you know, being a nuisance on offense. I also think that in this game, quite frankly, the Sixers like just definitely imposed their physicality on the Raptors. I wouldn't go so far as to complain that they fouled the Raptors up and down the floor, but especially in these off ball actions, and the Raptors run a ton of those. The referees were allowing a lot of just like reaching and grabbing and physicality and bumping, and Sixers being a more physical veteran team, like they took that advantage. And, you know, I did want to see how Grady would react to, you know, playing against Kyle Lowry, for example, or, you know, playing against just, again, a team like the Sixers who have some physical players, with a coach and Nick Nurse who will absolutely empower all of that. You know, he's the type that will push the envelope. We've seen a lot of Raptor games, of course. And Grady at first, it was actually very, I mean, it was funny, but it was also a little bit sad, to see Kyle Lowry take a charge against Grady Dick. Kyle obviously, you know, got a great ovation. Every time he comes back to Toronto, he will always get that. He played phenomenal basketball tonight, probably got like at least 7 or 8 deflections. I swear this guy was always in the right positions to create some sort of disruption for the Raptors offense, slapping balls out of bounds, you know, denying layups, taking a charge, you know, just the regular stuff from Kyle that we obviously know and love. And yeah, great. Obviously there was, I don't know if you want to call it symbolic, but still, to see, you know, the past in Kyle Lowry and take a charge in the future of the franchise, at least part of the future of the franchise in Grady Dick, you know, there obviously is some sort of like the beauty to that kind of moment. But also at the same time, it is kind of funny watching Kyle play this team with the Raptors. It's like, outside of Garrett Temple, who I know he's golf buddies with, it's like, you know, how many guys does Kyle still have a connection to? Like, you know, Kyle left the team at the, at the outset of the 2021 season, right? That was the Tampa season. The only guy he's actually even shared the court with is, I'm pretty sure, it's just Gary Trent Jr., who he might have played like 2 or 3 games with Gary after the trade deadline. That year in Tampa. But outside of that, most of these other guys, Kyle hasn't even played with. You know what I mean? At least guys who took the floor. If Chris Boucher was available, that would be a connection there. But, like, yeah, seriously, the time has changed so fast, and the Raptors organization has changed over the roster so fast as they pivoted towards this rebuild. Like, you know, it is just kind of – it's mind-boggling when Kyle Lowry comes into the building and he's dapping up mostly staffers rather than former teammates. Like that does kind of hit pretty hard. But in any case, Raptors, you know, I thought a second unit guys gave them something, you know, like this is better than the previous performances where you saw guys come in and just do absolutely nothing or just like not take their opportunities, you know what I mean? And I think for you know, a guy like Jordan Wara, 18 shots off the bench, 8 of 18, in 30 minutes. Again, the Sixers were really physical with him, but I thought Wara was able to play through it occasionally. I think he doesn't use his athleticism that much, but when he does, you're like, oh yeah, he's 6'8" with, like, you know, a pretty solid frame and build. He just kind of, like, is kind of moves like languid and just, like, isn't, you know, necessarily jumping around and exploding with energy. Like, for example, him and Kelly Oubre are, like, roughly the same size and probably same length, everything like that. But Kelly Oubre is jumping around. You notice him all the time. He's, like, you know, hyper, you know, just in general. Whereas War is, like, so low-key and chill and, like, you know, laid back, which I don't even think is a good thing. But you do notice him in some of those moments. Like, for example, Wara jumping over two guys for an offensive rebound, coming down strong with it, and then going up strong with it to finish for an and-one. Like, that is, you know, a great use of athleticism. Him finishing in transition where, you know, the aforementioned Oubre was the last man back trying to protect the rim, and Wara just absolutely dunked all over him. That was also really good, you know? And I think that, of course, you see the shooting, 2 of 7 from three tonight. I think he could do better than that, but ultimately, you know, he took some tough ones as well, created a lot of offense. Again, a lot of, you know, ball pressure when you face a Nick Nurse team. And I thought Wara had a one play where there was like 3 seconds left on the shot clock. He was getting double teamed to the three. He dribbled out of that double team and finished through traffic in the paint to create something out of nothing there. Like, there's an offensive skill set. The issue is defensively, he just doesn't really give you much. Like, he'll die on screens. He won't, like, stay connected. You don't necessarily feel like, okay, he's ahead of the play in terms of how he's rotating. If anything else, he's a little bit behind. He's got a couple shot blocks. He has one. He has another shot block here tonight. But still, it's not like he's primarily a shot blocker or even that great of a help defender. So I think it's less like it would be a real shame if, like, he couldn't get opportunities or he couldn't stick on teams. Despite the offensive skill set and despite the athletic skill set that he has, if only because he just doesn't really play defense at a passable level. Like, that would just be such a shame, you know? Like, I think that everybody has it to some degree. It's not like Wara is physically deficient in some way. It's just, if he was able to lock in on defense, then I think it'd be a kind of a no-brainer to bring him back. But in the meantime, you know, it's difficult to see if he's, like, sort of worth it, because even though he can really score, I think he's also giving a lot back defensively. So again, there's, like, what, 8 more games in the season, or there's 10 more games in the season. In any case, there's however many more games left in the season. I would love to see Wara take the most out of those opportunities. And yes, we know he could score, you know, he can even create some highlights, but just would love to see some sort of ability to sort of, you know, focus in on defense. That's also something Darko's mentioned with Wara as well. They're like, I think his words were, we know Jordan can score, but we're putting him on a plan right now to sort of learn the other end of the floor. So, I mean, I know it's a couple years into his career, but still, I think the offensive skill set certainly plays. It's just the defense. Yeah, in terms of backup point guard, that continued Kobe Simmons. You know, he makes a couple good plays here and there. He's not really making that many mistakes. It's not really a standout performance, but at the same time, when you're coming in, finishing the season on a 10-day type of deal, probably just trying to earn the next 10-day and another opportunity to potentially stay in the program and maybe go to summer league. Like, I think he's actually doing a pretty good job of just, like, sticking with what he knows and not doing too much. And there's a couple of bits of athleticism. He gets to the basket as well, but I also feel like he's more of a safer playmaker. Like, I feel like Javon's had some pretty bad passing turnovers where the pass is not there and he's forcing it. I feel like Kobe has mostly just stayed solid and responsible as, like, a backup point guard basically should be. You know, I think Garrett Temple got the first shift for the first half at sort of like that de facto 10th man, or in this case, 9th man. And he did a good job. I mean, speaking of, you know, ball pressure, one of the things with ball pressure, we saw it so much watching the Raptors the last couple of years being coached by Nick. But one of the things with ball pressure is, like, if you're going to press up really hard on the ball all the time trying to get steals and deflections, well, if the guy makes a really good move or just it makes a decent move and sort of, like, shifts out of that pressure, like with a crossover, let's say, you're probably going to get a lot of dribble penetration. And you even saw Garrett Temple beat his man with a nice crossover at the top, evading that pressure and turning it into a driving layup. Like, I continue to be in this plot where I'm like, okay, obviously just because we interviewed Garrett, and also because he hasn't played all season, it's not like he's never played basketball before, so you can't be too impressed with the fact that he got 2 points. But there are a couple plays he breaks out, you're like, damn, that's cool. I think the more notable thing with Garrett were the 2 fouls, ironically. Both sort of two no-nonsense fouls. One pretty hard one on Kelly Oubre, but he was making a play for the ball. It was airborne. Kelly landed hard, but he was able to stick in and stay, and obviously he finished out the game. He was awesome tonight, 32 points. But Garrett stopping the layup, forcing Kelly to get to the foul line, and another play, maybe Tobias Harris went to the basket? In any case, like, it's just you saw a level of, like, at least defensive standard. Like, okay, you know what? You beat the defense, fine, but I'm going to take a hard foul and you're going to have to make it to the free throw line. Kind of old school stuff, but I liked it. I liked it from Garrett. Second half, those minutes went to Mahamudu Gay instead. And I think the one thing with Gay is just like, look, if the blueprint is like we want you to become like a Chris Boucher type. And I think Chris actually said at the start of the season when we interviewed Chris, this is way back at the start of the year, I think he actually called him my twin. So I think, yeah, you know, if the goal is to get Mahamudu Gay to play like Chris Boucher, then there has to be lots of energy and pop and like notable, memorable moments involving sort of the way he plays, how unique he is, and the style of game that he plays. Like, of course, there's going to be like a couple of plays, like, you know, missed finishes here or there. I would say Chris is much more skilled offensively or refined offensively. But then again, like when Chris first came into the league, you wouldn't necessarily say that about Chris either. So he's also had to work really hard to get to the point where you could even say comparatively that he's that much more skilled than Mahamudu. But what's the signature thing with Chris is that, like, when he comes to the game, he'll get that offensive rebound. He got that huge block. You know, he'll have that big spark. You know, that signature moment, that's something that energizes the team just a little bit, puts them on a bit of a run, and then you can ride that, and then you can pull them out from the game when the game gets more solid and you got momentum back on your side. Like, that was always the best, strategy for using Chris. And you saw that a little bit here tonight in the third quarter where as soon as Gay checked into the game, he got an offensive rebound over two guys. Then he got fouled on the putback, got to the foul line, made both. Then on the other side, he was the help, defender at the basket and had a really nice block to spark a fast break for the Raptors going the other way. And even just the span of that 30 seconds there, that injection of just pure energy got the Raptors a couple of winning possessions. Now, of course, there's lots of other things he needs to, you know, work on. Like the fact that, you know, 7 minutes, only got one rebound. And I just think that he hasn't really rebounded at a very strong rate. That's something Chris always did at a high level, whether it was in the G League, whether that was in the pros. He always rebounded at a high level, especially offensively. Maybe defensive rebounding, especially as a five, he might get pushed out. That's whatever. But still, he was scrapped and fought for a lot of those. You're just not seeing that quite as much. And then I think also, in terms of the way Darko wants to play the offense, with his bigs constantly running these triple handoffs, you got to be able to, especially against teams like the Sixers, who, you know, again, for the 10th time in this episode, press up on you, really pressure the ball, make you, you know, try to turn your back, kind of deflect passes, deny sort of entry passes, things like that. You got to be really confident with the ball. And I just didn't feel like Mahamudu was particularly press resistant. Like the Raptors would have to, when he would have the ball at the top, the Raptors would have to run the, like, 3-4 actions to get somebody open. And it's usually just for a reset at the top rather than somebody getting back door, somebody cutting. And it looks really easy when Kelly does it, or it looks really easy when Jakob was doing it, or Thad Young, or whoever was running, even when Garrett Temple was doing it to some degree, which he's been playing small ball five of late. But, like, you know, you just don't quite see the same thing from Mahamudu. So again, like, this is clearly a work in progress. I think the Raptors probably want to see what he looks like, you know, going through the next summer, what kind of improvements he can make on all fronts. He seems to have made a lot of improvements in the short time. So, you know, even though we're seeing obviously a very unfinished product, hopefully you could see, based on his current rate of growth, something there where by next season you're like, okay, I feel more confident in putting him into the game. But, you know, ultimately, like, that's what these games are about, seeing what else these guys have. And yeah, I mean, what the Raptors have right now is a team that's like, you know, they're struggling to produce on either end of the floor. I think the offensive process, you know, continues to be decent. The ball movement tonight, the fact that they got 31 assists, even with what is, you know, basically a B or C squad for the team, it is a sign that, you know, the offense does work, that there are obviously lots of, you know, benefits and elements to it. I think defensively, it continues to just be something I'm concerned with, not for this year in particular, because it's obviously already lost, but maybe going forward, like, the Raptors won't be successful until they're, like, good again defensively. Like, that's a pretty simple statement that you can make for any team, but especially for the Raptors. Like, and I think you can, like, charitably say, well, you know, you get the injuries back and certain guys back in the rotation, that's going to help the defense a lot. I mean, I hope so. Like, the Raptors were not particularly strong on defense at any point in this year, say for like the first 2 weeks of the season. And obviously that personnel is long gone. So, you know, we could just kind of dash that idea. But like, I think you would like to see the members of the, like, of the rotation who are playing right now that will play next year as well. Guys like Kelly Olynyk, guys like Grady, you know, we'll see on Bruce Brown or Gary Trent. Those guys are free agents potentially. You know, we'll see on Wara, for example, as well. But like, you would love to see those guys be good defensively. And I think, look, playing Kelly at five, like, you're going to give up a lot defensively. Like, the Sixers really got so many of their points against Kelly playing as the five. And, you know, yes, when you play him as a reserve, that'll be mitigated to some degree because he's gone up against second units because he's playing less minutes. But still, that's something to be mitigated and worked around. I think Grady still has a long way to go defensively. And that'll come a lot with sort of the way he works on his body. And, you know, Bruce Brown and Gary Trent. I mean, Bruce, tonight he was more disruptive. Gary can be disruptive, but, like, I would say, like, generally speaking, like, they're probably around average, you know, maybe get a little bit below average, quite frankly. But, yeah, I mean, you just need some strong – you need a strong defensive identity. Like, the Raptors, for example, they had cut the lead, I believe, to 8 points. And Nick Nurse called a timeout with, like, 3:30 left in the third quarter. And the Raptors came out with a surprise, you know, like a Nick Nurse special, basically. They came out of the timeout with some zone. And as soon as the Sixers saw this, they got the ball into the middle of the floor, and I think maybe Harris had the ball in the middle of the floor, and he reversed it right back out to Campaign, and nobody made the rotation to him, and he got a wide open, like, again, nobody stepped even within 10 feet of him, and he knocked down a three. And of course, one of the weaknesses of the zone is you get it to the middle, you know, depending on sort of where your players are positioned, if they're recovering and all that kind of stuff, like, you might be caught out of position for a three, especially when you're not playing man-to-man defense like that. But, like, you tried something, like, literally with 3 minutes left in the game, hoping to get a stop, and the exact opposite happens. Like, you left a red-hot three-point shooter on a red-hot three-point shooting team on the night to get a wide-open three that made it 11 points. So it's not important now because, again, the games right now, we obviously understand that they're surrendering to, at least to some degree, they're okay with the fact that they're losing to this kind of extended stretch in hopes of whatever, either that you want to call it showcasing for players or getting more lottery balls. Ironically, they're not even getting more lottery balls because the teams below them are losing. Like, I don't know if you've seen what happened over this weekend, but, like, Portland lost by, like, 60. So, I don't know. At best, you maintain the current amount of lottery balls you have. But regardless, like, hopefully going forward next season, you will see a significant improvement defensively. Because otherwise, the results will continue to be kind of inconsistent like this, even when they get other guys back. But hopefully, we actually get to that point. You know, and I will look forward to that rather than sort of these kind of performances. But before I get to the three stars from tonight's episode and wrap up, a message from our sponsor. Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level. See if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Okay, your three stars from this performance. Honestly, I think I'm going to give the first out to Bruce Brown. I mean, I thought Bruce played really well tonight. 18 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals. Didn't have those moments where it was like, just like super aggressive. He does have some like weird fast breaks where he kind of like gets too slow or whatever. But like ultimately, I thought he played a really good game. And yeah, if he plays like this more consistently, I think that it'll be a lot easier for the Raptors to sort of maintain the value. But I also think that, like, I know this is a question for a lot of people, like, okay, can you still move Bruce Brown? You know, can you still get some value? Everyone knows that he's not really here for the long term like that. But, like, still, you would love to see him sort of play in the right way and that kind of, you know, reaffirms other teams that, like, yes, this is a good player. We should go get him because our team is looking to make some sort of winning push. Bruce Brown should be on a winning team. I really do feel like he does a lot of little in-between things that are very useful. And hopefully some team will try to go out there around the time of the draft and try to acquire him. If not, the Raptors may even pick up the option. Whatever. This is a conversation for another day. But Bruce Brown played well tonight. Your second star, I'll give it to Kelly, but I will say only for the offense, man. Defensively, again, like, it's not a surprise that 32-year-old Kelly Olynyk starting at center on a team that, quite frankly, is not helping him at all defensively is going to struggle, but there are some real concerns, of course. But in any case, 18 points, 5 rebounds, 11 assists, 3 steals, incredible production offensively, 7 of 8 from the field, continues to sort of like just, you know, hold his own in the post, you know, create a lot of advantages from there. You know, obviously very unselfish with the passing too. We'll love to see the turnovers come down just a little bit, like 5 turnovers. And I do feel like there's like 2 or 3 every game. And I was like, those feel like almost unforced or a little bit sloppy, but I mean, at the same time, like the situation is what it is, right? So your third star, I'll give it to Wara again. This is just for offense, but 19 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. We know he could score. And he made a lot of good plays. Your Gerald Henderson Award winner, I think it has to be Kelly Oubre for 32 points or campaign with 24. I kind of want to give it to Kyle so badly. I thought Kyle played such a good game. Made you completely appreciate what he's about. He's just straight up about winning. 11 points, 10 assists, a rebound, 2 blocks, 4-6 from the field, 3-5 from 3. You know, just did a great job. So many deflections, but it's got to be Kelly Oubre. I mean, the guy had 32 points. Like, that's... Yeah, that's the main reason why the Raptors lost. I thought actually Raptors overall like played and competed, and multiple times they could have let go of the rope. They didn't. But at the same time, every single time the Sixers were knocked down at 3. So, you know, you lost to a red hot team. And by the way, the Sixers haven't even scored over 130. Like 135 is the most points the Sixers have scored since like December 16th. Before that, of course, they had a big stretch there playing like, you know, 146 against Washington, 146 against Washington, 138 against the Lakers, 137 against Indiana. Like that, but that's when they had Embiid and Maxey. Like, this is like a huge anomaly for them. So again, credit to them for knocking out all these shots. But yeah, Raptors continue to slide. We will see what happens to them next week. It gets a lot harder. They go back on the road as well, but we'll be there to cover all of it. So thanks everyone for listening. Please continue to rate, review, subscribe to the Raptor Show. And yeah, you've been listening to the Raptor Traction Podcast, brought to you by Campbell's New Chunky Spicy Soup. Happy Easter, everyone.